It's time for Bourbon with Friends, the bourbon podcast that never takes itself too seriously. Pull up a chair, grab a glass, and remember, a bourbon with friends can change the world. Here we go.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Bourbon with Friends. As always, I am here with my two co-hosts, Paul and Carissa. Carissa, it's always nice to see your face on here. How are you guys doing today?
Good. How peachy. Are you guys?
Peachy. 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 Just peachy.
Peachy cane.
Been a day.
It's been Connor a long said day. The same thing.
It's been a day.
It's been a long
my
day.
My day's been really great.
So. That's good.
Yeah.
Get a lot of haircuts in?
I did.
Awesome. Awesome. We are here today with a special guest, and I've had was a little bit of trouble getting these samples to me because of just the dumb place where I live, but finally they're in my possession. We all have them, and it's a whiskey that I've never had before. It's the newest releases from Barrel Spirits. We got Batch 35 Barrel Bourbon, Batch 4 Barrel Rye, and who better to talk whiskey with than with the chief whiskey scientist, Tripp Stimson. Tripp, it's thank you for coming on the podcast, man. How you doing today?
Great. Thanks for having me, guys. Really looking forward to this.
Absolutely, man. So talk about chief whiskey scientist. I was telling you before, that's the coolest job title I've ever heard. What's your background in whiskey like? How'd you get into the spirit, and what brought you to Barrel as the chief whiskey scientist?
So my background is in biochemistry and molecular biology, and, you know, going into college, leaving high school, your guidance counselor does not tell you that you can actually go into the spirits industry and make bourbon for a living. So, my original plan was actually to go to medical school. So I'm on the path to medical school. I'm getting ready to graduate college and, you know, doing all those things to take the next step. And it turns out that Brown-Forman, who I'm sure you guys know in this business, was looking for a chemist at the time. And so decided to sort of take a path change in my career and, give spirits a try. So left college, moved up to Louisville, Kentucky, and worked for Brown-Forman for nearly 10 years in varying capacities as in a chemist, benchtop chemist role, and then also in sort of a distillery science position, working with yeast and fermentation and, you know, the efficiencies that help create better alcohol and save money in the operations piece. So I guess 10 years after that, working in whiskey distilleries and tequila distilleries, working in some wine, I noticed that there's this boom in the craft spirits industry. This is about 2012 or so is the timeline. People wanting to get into the spirits industry, thinking that building a distillery is this, you know, great idea, and that, you know, if you build it, they will come sort of mentality.
Yep.
And it's something that I wanted to be a part of and really leverage my expertise in the operations of a distillery, the science background, and how to create good whiskeys efficiently, you know, the proper way. So doing some consulting for several years and really trying to paint an honest picture of what it looks like to design, build, and operate a distillery. Yep. Versus what it would be like to build a brand. And so there were lots of people who had money or were willing to go out and get money to put together a business plan and build the factory, right? So it's, you've got this this factory that makes the bourbon that you then build the brand with. And so what people didn't realize at the time is that you didn't necessarily have to have the factory to build the brand. And so at that point in my career, what I was doing is try to talk to some of my customers at the time and say, look, we could put unique blends together. We can create unique products without actually having a distillery ourselves or yourselves.
Absolutely.
You can put some money into creating a bourbon brand. And if a few $100,000, and if it works great, then you do it bigger the next time. If it doesn't work, then you're out a few $100,000 and not tens of millions in a lot of cases. You just start running the ROI on what it costs or how many bottles of bourbon you have to sell to get $20 million back. It's a lot of bottles of bourbon. Some wanted to build a distillery. It's a few. So some of the folks wanted to, go on and build a distillery and operate and all those things. And then some others really wanted to just build the brand and sort of slow walk it and see how things went. Mm-hmm. And so fast forward a couple more years, and while I'm working at a different distillery, we're doing some contract work, and I meet Joe Beatrice. Joe Beatrice is the founder of Barrelcraft Spirits. And we're talking about, he's on his second, or he just finished bottling his first batch. We're getting ready to do the second batch in the bottling for him. And we're talking about how he got into business, because I'm always curious about how people sort of land in this. And it was really funny, because this is one of the synergies that really sort of set this thing off for us. And we're talking about this, and he says, I really wanted to build a distillery for about 30 minutes. And then I realized that I didn't have the expertise and I don't need the factory. So what I saw there is that here's a man who has done his research and realized what I had been telling customers for years, that you don't necessarily need this factory to make the bourbon. You can take the bourbon that's already available in a commodity and put unique blends together and build a brand. So we saw eye to eye immediately there. And so, we can get into some of the detail about where we went after that. But that's really what sort of lined us up on the same path to creating these unique blends, and two of those that we're going to talk about tonight.
It's funny that you talk about not needing the actual distillery to build the brand, because that is the most common way these days of how people are getting into the whiskey game, right? They're not investing tens of millions of dollars into a distillery. They're taking that commodity of whiskey, sourcing their whiskey, which I think nowadays is becoming so much more of a accepted trend, as it should be. And they're building their brand, they're building their portfolio, and then venturing off into bigger and better things. That is the MO these days, where I'm sure 20 years ago it wasn't, but it's refreshing to hear you say that, because it's the trend whiskey is going, and it's funny that Barrel kind of started that, the preeminent blenders of quality whiskeys. When you were going to school, like you mentioned, people didn't, really tell you that whiskey is an industry they can get into. Down there in Tennessee, did you have, just out of curiosity, did you have like a preconceived notion that Tennessee whiskey was kind of where was that rather than Kentucky bourbon? Was that a thing down there? Because you're from Chattanooga.
Yeah, being from Tennessee, Tennessee whiskey is what you drink. It's just sort of the way it is. Just like being from Kentucky, folks from Kentucky drink bourbon. I think what's been fun about what I do right now is that if you can put all of those preconceived notions about Tennessee whiskey or specifically Kentucky bourbon aside, and you can really focus on the flavors that each of those brings to the table, and then how each of those can work with each other to create something that is far more complex than either one of those on its own, then you're into a whole new world of product creation. And that's what we've done for the last 10 years.
Yeah.
And that the interesting thing, right? Like what Connor's talking about when it comes to contract distilling or anything, it's, it's getting increasingly harder with all of the type of brands that are out there as well to do kind of a single barrel or something like that where you get real unique flavor. It does happen, right? Like, it's not impossible. It's not like it's not, you know, it's not easy to do. But the innovation side of it is coming with blending, like you said, finding out like I can put 39% Tennessee in there. I could put, you know, 10% corn whiskey and the rest bourbon and mix the ages and come up with something that absolutely smacks you in the flavor, you know, palate. Then you do something where you're finishing in unique barrels, whether it's a double finish, a triple finish, or what have you. That's where a lot of the innovation comes from. And I mean, let's be honest, a lot of us that love whiskey don't have $10 to $15 million just sitting around. And then you got to sit on that $10 to $15 million for at least 3 to 4 years. So if you're going to build a brand, you have to actually have like an, you know, a really good, you know, method there. And that's where I think blending is very unique. And it's, I think it's what's really catching fire. And it's, you're starting to already see it's kind of the next big thing, right? Like, it's the aspect where a ton of brands are really starting to run with it, even with like Infinity Blends and things like that. And I think you're going to get a lot of uniqueness there. And that's kind of like the next thing, the next, you know, from the next 10 year perspective, outside of some of the big traditional brands, that's where you're going to see a lot of your consumer base go to.
You're 100% correct. And I think sort of the shift in what we're seeing now is 10 years ago, the mindset was that you had to have the factory. Mm-hmm. And to create your bourbon, you had to have your distillery. And it's shifting into one. It's, you know, blending used to be that four letter word, right? You know, blending was not very well received until recent years. And people, consumers, and people who want to actually build brands are starting to approach products, bourbons, whiskeys, with a different mindset in that what's in that bottle is really important, right? It becomes less about where it comes from and more about the flavor that's actually in the bottle, which really sets off a whole nother transaction of where do you go to get all these flavors? And we can talk about some of those things in a few minutes. But the consumer as a whole is really asking more questions and wanting to know more about how these products are made. And so they're willing to experiment more, let's say, with new products and innovation that are hitting the shelves, as long as what's in the bottle tastes good.
Right. Yeah. It's pretty hard to sell a bad whiskey, I'd say.
You sell a bad whiskey once, maybe.
Good point. Yeah. The reason I brought up like being from Chattanooga, you know, like you are and having that preconceived notion is because you guys were kind of, from what I can tell, the first people to bring forth mixing and blending these different types of whiskeys. So with batch 35 that I just took a sip of and that we're going to be drinking here, it's a blend of Indiana, Tennessee, and Kentucky bourbon. We have 6, 7, and 8 year old Indiana bourbon, 7 and 13 year old Tennessee whiskey, and 8 year old Kentucky bourbon in here. So it's taking aspects of several different, regions. With batch 35, what was your mindset going into crafting this particular batch?
So, you know, we approach, so sort of top down when we approach these blends, it's about grouping barrels together to create what we call component blends, or you call them micro blends, or, you know, however you want to phrase those things. But it's about putting flavors together that work together on a small level. And with batch 35, we started with some of the spicier barrels that we had. So some of the 6 and 7 year old stuff. And we started putting micro blends together with this group of barrels, until we got to a place where we had small, complex blend of different levels of spiciness. We did the same thing with some of the sweeter barrels, which in this particular instance was the 8-year-old stuff. It tended to be a little bit sweeter. So blending those together and getting sort of a like a group of sweet components that we had. And then the older 13-year is, it's got some really, really deep cherry and some deep, dark fruit in it. And that sort of fills in the blanks. So as we put these things together, we have the spicy components. Then we have that the fruit blend component. We blend those together and then we fill in the gaps. So as we're doing this, we're doing it in very small levels between these micro blends so that we can see how the different whiskeys actually work together, because there is such a thing as having whiskey too perfect to where they just cancel everything out. You lose all your flavor. So as we work these different micro blends together to get the complexity we want, but we also have the balance that we're after. And then that gets us to a solid base blend. Mm-hmm. And in this base blend, what we have is a representation of all of these smaller micro blends where they all sort of work together to build this really deep complexity. And then after that, we come back with the 13-year-old and it fills in the gaps. So the question is, at this point, we're asking ourselves, what's it missing? You know, where can we layer in another flavor? How can we stack this a little bit deeper so that we can add something without covering something else up? Mm. And that's really the trick in getting this together.
Sounds like there's Chris, a lot of art going into this.
Chris is too quiet. She's scared. No,
I'm just listening. I mean, all of it is so out of my league on all this stuff. And so just listening to how everything comes together is just, I mean, it's mind blowing. I love listening to stuff like this.
This is very in depth. I mean, yeah, this is, there's levels to this blending and there literally are levels.
Oh yeah.
You're doing trip. You're blending on top of blends.
The interesting thing that I really noticed when you were talking about the sweetness, right, was that was what kind of hit me in the front right off the bat, was a really sweet aspect.
Sweet. It smells really sweet.
Go well, dig in, guys. Go ahead. Don't be shy. Drink some of it. The thing that I really kind of got surprised about at was the sweet in the front and the hug in the back. It's actually a little delayed. So you kind of, your brain's almost a little fooled here. You're like, oh, this is like a sweet 90 proof. And then it's like, ooh, hello, you saucy minx. You just got me. You snuck up. But the viscosity on this thing is what's really interesting. Lots of viscosity, real oily, great. Like the legs are super thick, super long. It's got a nice, real kind of, I want to say it's got a medium long finish. And the only reason why I say medium long is the flavor doesn't sit there as long, but that like little, that subtle warmth sits there a lot longer. That first sweetness kick, I'm guessing there's a lot of corn on this because it's very sweet, very vanilla, but I don't get, it's not grain forward. It's very sweet forward, which is really impressive. I can definitely tell that there's some older stuff in this because there is that those barrel characteristics that you're going to get from the older whiskey.
Little mustiness, right? Mustiness.
Yeah, that you're getting a little bit of the wood kind of really shining through. The cherry, I think, does shine really nicely on this as well. I mean, overall, like if you have a good palate, Chris is going to be like, well, don't say that because I'm here. If you have a really good palate, you can really discern a lot of stuff here, but it would be interesting, right? Like this is where Chris really comes in and gives an interesting perspective because we can kind of discern all this, but from someone who hasn't, right, and who's kind of newer at this, it's good to get your perspective too because, you know, a lot of people are not where we are when it comes to that or where a lot of other people are and they just like what's really good.
Totally. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a 117 proof. And so even from that, like I still feel like it's really, you know, I know you guys hate this word, but really smooth. So there's
The word. Other people hate it. We're fine with it.
Well, so I don't feel like there is a whole lot of bite. You definitely get that warmth, but it's super easy to drink. You know, you don't really have that like burning sensation with some of them that's over, you know, like 110 proof or something. And so, but it is, it's really sweet when you first, the smell is really, really sweet. And as soon as it hits your tongue, like you, it's not, you don't get that like fire warmth like immediately. But I would agree with Paul in the whole like medium to long finish, I guess, is you do kind of have that like lingering warmth. But it's not, the flavor isn't necessarily lingering for that long, but it is really, really good.
It's a good fall whiskey, I would say.
Yeah,
a good fall winter whiskey. I would want to drink this when it's cold out, sitting outside with a fire, because that warmth, that's what I'm looking for. Right. And sometimes you get like the reverse, right? You'll get it. You'll get a kick. That spice will hit you and then it just kind of hits you and then it's there. Like mine's still there. Like I feel that warmth in my chest. I'm sitting here going like, yeah, this is sitting outside watching football on my phone on a Saturday. It's 47 degrees outside with a fire pit. Like that's what I'm jiving with right now. And I love that. And that's where like when you can place where you would drink a whiskey, I think that really tells you something as well. You know, like when you can imagine this is where I would be doing that, that really
this
goes
is where I want to have this. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Cause every whiskey's different, right? Like I'll never drink scotch when it's warm out. To me, it would drive me crazy. I just can't do it. I have a Talisker my friend gave me and I really want to drink it, but it's too hot outside. I just can't do it. I don't enjoy it. This is one from like October to March or April. I would drink the shit out of this.
Yeah, I'm a seasonal drinker anyway, right? And so this is definitely a good like fall. I would agree with that. Like it's a good fall.
Seasonal equal opportunity drinker.
Yes. Don't make fun of me for that.
Well, and these hold up in cocktails pretty well too. If you wanted to make a cocktail with it.
Yeah, I feel like this would be good in a Manhattan.
I'm big on cocktails. I love a good cocktail, so.
All right, Connor, we haven't heard from you yet.
It's I get a lot of root beer on this, like a spicy kind of.
I can see that.
I agree with that.
Almost like a even like a birch beer. Like there's some type of like
licorice. That,
a bit, yeah. No, I agree. This is incredibly complex. There's a lot going on. The finish, I would say, is incredibly long. I don't think it's medium long. I think it's really long. But it's at 117 proof. That's to be expected. Incredibly complex. I get a lot of cherry on there to go along with kind of that root beer aspect, that soda pop kind of almost like sting to it a bit. And is this
a high rye?
I'd imagine it's at least 13%.
So let me talk a little bit about the grain bill here.
Yeah, go for it.
We have not traditionally put out what the mash bill is or the grain bill because we use so many different grain bills when we put our batches together that we would literally have to calculate it. And it was just up until recently, we just roll with it. The product's great. And people would like it, and the mash bill thing—they understand it's a blend, and it was not it was never a real issue. Mm-hmm. What we're seeing now is people are really, really curious about all of the mash bills that are going in to put the blends together.
Yes.
So what we've started doing, actually, beginning with batch 35, and we've done it with the rye batch 4 as well, which we're getting ready to taste also, is we do what we call a derived mash bill.
Okay.
And so
I like that.
The way we approach the derived mash bill is we will literally take the percent volume that we use in the blend and then add all of those up based on their inclusion in the final product. And so with batch 35, that gives us a 78 corn, 18% rye, and a 4% malted barley.
Okay.
Yeah, so it is.
So yes, to answer your question, it is a high rye.
Yeah, that's where I think you're 18%. Getting that really coming through from that perspective, right? Like the aspect that there's that licorice root beer, you're getting those things coming through from that, and that's definitely very rye. You also get those a little bit more on like a barrel strength with a high rye too. It starts to really get it's really weird. I think the higher proof you have with rye, the more sweeter the notes come through and the less proof you get more of it's really weird I don't know why that works that way, but I've had 90 proofs that are high rye or even, you know, regular rye that are more spicy than like this 117 proof. It's real interesting when you get into the nerdy shit about how that works, you know?
Yeah, I don't know anything about the nerdy stuff, so.
She's just like, tell
me. Teach me your ways. She's like, tell me she's more.
Like, she's like drinking. She's like, tell me more about why I drink and I don't love talk.
It. I love it.
Well, we're going to
move. As long as you like what's in the glass, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. We're going to move to the rye. And what's really interesting is Connor and I have been talking about this in kind of like really funny ways. We're like, we were not rye guys. And now we looked at each other the other day and we're like, I think we're rye people now. Like, what, how did this happen? We were not rye people. And now it's like, we're outside drinking and like, all of a sudden we're like half a bottle deep. It's like, oh yeah, that's been a rye, hasn't it? Look at this. We're rye people. So I'm real curious. Plus rye, I think rye is like one of the things too, especially in the bourbon world or whiskey world, where there is a lot of innovation to be had. A lot of different flavor profiles to play with from a rye perspective. You know, I don't know too many people out there that are finishing rye. I know it's out there, right? But it's not as prevalent as bourbon. So I think rye is kind of like an interesting frontier to be able to really play with blends and things like that to really create unique flavor profiles.
Yeah, 100%, Paul. And this goes back to what we were talking about before we actually, started the podcast is that if you allow yourself to sort of step outside the norms and focus on just flavor and not necessarily where it comes from or anything else, and just allow the product to sort of drive and fill in the gaps with flavor from anywhere. Maybe it's a rye, maybe it's a bourbon, it's a certain type of whiskey. And then you get into the different finishing casks and all these things. Even if you don't think it's going to work, give it a shot. It might surprise you. And so I think, to your point, I think there's a lot of room in rye to continue to innovate with blending and finishing.
It's like being a mad scientist. I fucking love it. this one's really unique.
Quintessential rye to me. Like this is all rye, and especially on the nose. I'm going to try it, but like, especially on the nose, like that very like distinctive, like dark fruit going into like a licorice, like an even darker fruit of that. And man, ooh, this smells so good.
I'm going to really tell good. You,
yeah, I'm a rye you guy.
To,
what's going on?
I want
on?
You to try it before I tell you what I get, because I don't want to spoil it. It's unique.
Yeah.
So this one's a little drier to me. When I drink this, the first thing I get is the fizzy, like the fizzy bubbly aspect of like a root beer. It's like that dry, fizzy kind of taste. And then it hits a floral bomb behind it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm getting like that sweet licorice kind of aspect right in the front, and then like that floral notes just hit me. This is spicier, I will tell you that. I mean, I know this is not 117, it's 115 proof, 5.5 year old rye, but it hits you. Now this one's got a long finish. This lingers. This one just sits there and comes into your living room, takes its shoes off, and decides it's gonna watch a game or two on a Saturday. Like, this thing is definitely hanging out for a little bit. But that dryness on the first sip is what's throwing me, because it's almost like a boom boom flavor that really hits super fast. And it's so impressive how that happens, because I'm not used to that for a rye. Usually you get rye like, oh yeah, this. I don't know if any of you guys are getting that, but that dryness to hit first really like pops in my brain.
So I will say, just on the nose, compared to the batch 35, I don't feel like it's nearly as strong. So like when I go to smell the batch 35, it like really hits you. This is not doing that to me, which I can kind of appreciate, because it's not as like pungent, I guess. And so you're able to kind of taste more of it rather than like sniffing it all at once too. Does that make sense? Because that's how it is for me.
I know it makes sense. I think it's like the weird play with whiskey, right? Like,
yeah,
the batch 35 bourbon smells, you know, it's a little bit more hard and it's a little bit more sweet. And I think the rye smells a little bit more sweet and packs a little bit more of a punch. I just blended the two together. I want to see what it tastes like.
Yeah.
Look at you already doing it.
Now, that's good.
Yeah.
Come on. Let's go see. What do you get?
Well, you said root beer. I get the soda, but this is like goes from like dark fruit to like almost like initially I get the dryness. You're absolutely right. I get like a, almost like a grape, like a grape. Like this reminds me of grape Fanta, you know, the soda Fanta, grape soda. And then it goes right into like a, almost like a tobacco-y-ness to me.
Yeah. I think that's where the dryness comes from.
Yeah, I think it is as well. And plus, you know, just it being a rye, I would imagine, I don't know if this is true or not, but rye is, you know, generally a drier whiskey, I would imagine.
It depends on the rye.
I feel like most ryes I have are pretty dry in that respect. I'm sure there's some outliers, but it's almost like a tobacco-ness towards the back of the palate.
A little bit of leather, finish. I think, too.
Yeah, those like earthy kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, and that melts into kind of like a kind of a rye finish, very spicy, peppery, longer finish as well, and drinks. I think both of these drink exactly at the proofs that they're at. I think that you can tell these are, I'd imagine if they're not barrel proof, they're quite near barrel proof.
They're cask strength.
So there you go. They really kind of, I think.
I'll give a different opinion on that. I think the bourbon doesn't drink as, I think the rye drinks hotter than the bourbon. I'm not saying that the bourbon isn't spicy, that you can't tell that it's a little bit of higher proof, but I think that you definitely get a little bit more oomph on the rye. And I just blended the two together, and you guys should do this too, like blend the two together and try it. It's real interesting where that hug is, man. That hug is way different when you blend the two together.
What a surprise. You blended them together. I was actually going to.
Yeah, I mean, I probably wouldn't have guessed if I didn't have the bourbon with like the not. The 35, if I didn't have the bottle in front of me, I probably wouldn't have guessed that it was a 117. So.
Yeah, I definitely think it drinks a little bit less than that, which is good.
Yeah.
Which is dangerous, actually. You don't want to drink half a bottle of that.
It is dangerous, yes.
You will find out what gravity is real quick. Did you guys
so
blend it together?
So just so you guys know, the derived Mashville, similar to the way we did back 35, this is going to be an 89% rye, a 7% corn, and 4% malted barley.
That's where you're getting a little bit of interesting flavor notes that are coming out of that rye.
Yes. Yeah.
And then that dryness and that herbal characteristic you're getting is that Canadian really contributes to that.
Yeah, I was going to say this is a blend.
The Canadians, man.
It's an Indiana, Tennessee, Kentucky, and Canadian blend of rye whiskeys, which is, again, I mean, I don't know anyone else but Barrel that does a blend that in depth. I mean, it really adds to kind of like there's so much depth to each of these glasses. And I suppose I will drink this blend of the two that we tried per Paul's request.
Chris, did you blend it yet? Blend them together?
Sorry, not yet. I'm working on it.
So I have a question. This is where I think it'd be really interesting to some of the nerdy fans that listen to the show. You have Canadian whiskey. Talk to me a little bit about the difficulties of getting a Canadian whiskey, or is it the other way around, right? Is it easy to get Canadian whiskey to the U.S., but it's a little bit harder to get U.S. whiskey to Canada?
I mean, getting Canadian whiskey down here is not really that difficult. I mean, it's if you have the relationships in place, it's really not all that difficult. I think most times it's easier to do it in a tote or a tanker in some cases, because the Canadians like to reuse their barrels. So whereas when you buy barrels of bourbon from suppliers in the right. States, typically you're going to get the barrel and the barrel's going to have bourbon in it. A lot of times when you buy Canadian whiskey, you're buying it by a drum, a tote, an ISO tanker or tanker, some other volume, and you're not getting the wood. They want to hold on to the wood and reuse it.
Right.
So side note, I did mix them and I do think that that's really good.
That's really good, isn't it?
And obviously it depends on like what your ratios are, depending on if you do half and half. I feel like I did pretty close to half and half in my mix, but it's definitely a good concoction. So,
Trib, I'm curious, what's the most unique blend that you guys have made so far at Barrel? Like, to you, what's the most unique thing that you've done?
Oh, wow. I mean, we do so many different blends and finishes and use lots of different types of cooperage. Mm-hmm. I would say one of my favorites is our Tale of Two Islands blend that we did several years ago. I think it was in 2018 or 2019 is when we released that. What we did is actually, and interestingly enough, this was a rum, interestingly enough, and we had all of these different blends and finishes lined up on our benchtop, and Joe and I were talking about what's the most interesting thing we could do. What could we do that's outside the box that could still taste good? And so we're tasting all these different lab blends that I had made up. And the very last one was an 8-year Jamaican rum finished in an Islay Scotch cask.
You
think Jamaican rum and Islay Scotch, there's no way that's going to work. And we thought that. I mean, we thought there's no way this is going to work. And let me tell you, it was amazing.
No, it was absolutely amazing.
And we bottled.
I think I have an Islay Scotch that's aged in rum. Hold on a second.
Do you?
Yeah.
That's interesting if he does.
I think.
I probably do too, if I'm honest.
No, I'm sorry. I was thinking Lagavulin 14 was Islay finished in rum, but it's Islay finished in brandy, hogsheads. But it's, nonetheless, that is insane. So it was an 8-year Jamaican rum finished in an Islay Scotch cask.
Wow, that's right.
Wow, I really want to try that.
It was so great and it was so well received that the story continues this year. And so the barrels that we used for that project, the rum barrels, the Islay Scotch casks, we have reused those for an additional project that we actually just finished bottling today.
Oh.
And it is a bourbon that is now finished in our Tale of Two Islands casks. Wow. So the original Islay Scotch casks and the Jamaican rum barrels that we used for that project, we finished bourbon in, put a blend together, and we're releasing that. It'll be on the shelves in a couple of weeks.
So how do you, like, what's the name of that? You say it's finished in X bourbon. How would you put that on a label?
So what we've done is we have what's called our cask finish series. Now, this is something we're just now launching this. Okay. It's called our cask finish series. And the first two that we did, one is an Amberana finished bourbon.
Love
and
that.
The other is the Tale of Two Islands cask finish bourbon. And it's not specifically one cask. Mm-hmm. It's the casks that we used in the Tale of Two Islands project.
Okay.
Which would have been the rum and the Islay casks.
Yep.
And so we finished bourbons in both of those and put the blends together, and that's where we've landed with the finished product.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's so just interesting.
I love that stuff. That's where like I get all excited about
it. I know, that's so cool. And I think that's what like the
like
general
talking dirty.
I think that's like what the general whiskey audience kind of prefers now, as you mentioned before, Trip, with like a lot of people want to see the mash bills and what's the grain like, and so they can maybe figure out what they want to gravitate towards. I think people love those weird cask finishes, and I think it's not just like a basic finish like in a sherry cask or any type of wine cask, port, whatever, Pedro Ximénez, whatever it is. They like almost like that double or even triple finishing of like it's put into this cask and then this cask and then it's aged in something weird. And it's, you know, the creativity mm-hmm. that's coming with whiskey, especially within the last few years, is off the charts. And I think your cask series, from what it sounds like, is on that route of just incredibly unique expressions that, you know, people like the three of us that enjoy whiskey are going to be looking for, because it's just, you don't see it anywhere else, you know?
Yeah. And I think also the fact that there is a lot of whiskey on the shelf these days, right? And so the consumer is really looking for as much information on the bottle as they can find in order to determine whether they want to spend the money or not. Right.
Yeah.
Because you go into a liquor store and maybe you're not familiar with our product specifically. So what we've done is try to be as transparent as possible by doing these derived mash bills, talking about literally all of the states and all of the ages and giving tasting notes and trying to provide as much information around what these finishes are so that the consumer has a good idea of what they're getting once they buy that product. And then obviously the idea is once they buy the product once, hopefully there's enough trust in what we're doing that they'd be willing to come back and try the other blends that we're putting together as well.
Yeah, I understand that. Paul, I want to ask the movie question because we haven't asked.
Yeah,
in a
go
while.
For it. Go for it.
I've, you know,
Chris and Mike ask a book question. You never know.
Yeah. So
I won't ask any book questions.
We haven't done this in a while, Trip, because I don't know why. We just haven't. But what I like, especially people in the whiskey industry, we can talk whiskey all day, but sometimes that, you know, when we kind of creep towards the ends of the episodes, right? I like to stray away from whiskey a little bit and get into more important issues and more
life-altering
issues. You do that. I would like to know, Trip.
Life-altering issues.
This is an important question, and I think most of our listeners would agree. If you had to pick your favorite movie ever made, and you take that however you want, whether it's rewatchability, mm-hmm. whether it's best produced, whatever it is, when you think of the greatest movie ever made, what movie is it and why?
Oh, wait.
That's a really
There's no wrong answer.
Man, that's
for the
a tall
most part.
Order.
That is a tough
that,
question.
That's a hard
Connor.
Question.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I can answer pretty quickly.
Okay, so I'll answer it, but I'm going to have to give you a caveat.
That's fine.
So I would say the 10-year-old version of myself would answer that question and say Goonies, because every 10-year-old wants to find the treasure, right? Mm-hmm. And you're laughing because you get it, right?
I do, yeah.
Everybody wants that as a child. As an adult, I would have to say National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, because
wow,
you can always have Christmas 12 months a year with that movie.
That's a great answer.
I love that movie. It is hysterical.
That's a great answer.
So you watch that? You'll watch that in August?
I don't think
I'll watch
ever
it anytime it's on TV.
Time. Yeah, I don't think there's ever a wrong time to watch that.
I don't know. I mean... It is a great movie. Don't get me wrong. I don't even think Chip's going to get really mad at me. I hope. So please still send me whiskey after I say this. I don't even think I'd put it in my top five Christmas movies. If I'm being 100% honest.
Really?
And I don't mean that as
wow.
any disrespect, because I love that movie, but I just think like Elf, the Santa Claus, Home Alone, the Grinch. I really like the Grinch with Jim Carrey.
Which one? Okay.
Like, I think they're all like,
okay.
I don't know. Maybe I'd put it as number five.
You're a mean one, Mr. That's Connor. Grinch.
But Connor loves it because he is the Grinch.
He is the Grinch. He is always grumpy about something.
Always.
Yeah, I am.
Chip, tell everyone where they can find more about your brand and as well as potentially buy your product.
So you can find us at barrelbourbon.com. If you're looking to buy online, we have a buy now button for our products on the website. If you're looking to purchase at a store, we also have a locator on the website where you can put in your address and area code, zip code, and it'll tell you where to go to get the products. We're on all of the social media platforms at Barrel Craft Spirits, Barrel Bourbon, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all the other platforms, YouTube,
MySpace,
LinkedIn,
MySpace.
Yeah. Well, you're dating yourself, Connor.
AIM Messenger.
Connor wasn't even around when MySpace was a thing.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's no way you would have had a MySpace, Connor. You're too young.
Honey, you're barely old enough to have MySpace, too.
Oh, no. I had one for years. Don't give me that.
What were you, like 12?
I would have been in junior high.
Oh, my God. These people over here talking about MySpace. Yeah, I would have been. When I was in college. When I was in college with it, like, God bless. Like, oh, yeah, I was in junior high. Lord. Like, all right, I was like a junior in college. All right, that's cool. No problem. Trip, man, we really appreciate you jumping on. This was really great. The whiskey's really good. I really enjoy kind of the nerdy kind of conversation, walking through all aspects of this. I love that.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Really enjoyed it. Glad you guys enjoyed the whiskey. And no hard feelings on the Christmas movies.
Connor's going to hold a grudge forever, just letting you know. He's like, never. He's like, you might have a beard like Santa Claus, but you're dead to me. Oh my God. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We really appreciate it. Go check out the brand. I think you're going to really enjoy it. Remember, everyone, a bourbon with friends can change the world.
That's it for this episode of Bourbon with Friends. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. While you're at it, leave us a review to make it easier for others to find the show. You can also check us out on Instagram at BWF Podcast. Thanks for listening.